Before we get started with this week's episode, we'd like to remind you folks that the Air Raid podcast is available at many places, including iTunes, the Stitcher Radio app for your smart device, CairoRadio.com, and the all-new Adore Network at Adore.fm. Let's get started with the episode. Well, hello and welcome, everyone. Welcome to the Air Raid Podcast. This is episode 289 in what is now officially considered a long and drawn-out series. I am your host, Aaron Roden, and this, of course, is the show where we drop bombs of awesome straight into your ear hole. Boom indeed, folks. Boom indeed. We've got a great show planned for you this week. Jim the Rev Heath, none other than the Reverend Horton Heat himself, will be joining us here in the backyard. Actually, he called in on the phone the other day, and we had a beautiful, beautiful conversation. A lot about fear, and we're going to be talking about fear in the moments to come. Here on this episode 289 of the Air Raid Podcast. Yeah, a lot of fear, man. A lot of fear going on. Had a great conversation. It was a very candid interview with Mr. Jim Heath, and this was a big honor for me to talk with Jim, especially on the subject of having children and being a touring musician for over 30 years, man, a discography that spans back to, 1990. First album came out on Sub Pop Records. Smoke 'em if you got 'em. I still own that record, folks. I still own that record. It's on my shelf right now. I'm eyeballing it as we speak. This was a big honor, man, to talk to this guy. He's been a big part of the soundtrack to my life, especially my youth. And it was awesome to hear his perspective on how the music industry has changed, his fears about that, and how he keeps going, and how he tries to stay relevant, and he does it, man. He does it. They're still doing it. Tour 150 days out of each year, man. That's insane. And they've got some dates. They're on tour right now, folks. They're on tour right now. The 15th, which is today, they'll be in Reno, Nevada at Cargo Music Hall. Then on the 16th, they'll be in Petaluma, California at Mystic Theater. The 17th, Fresno, California at Fulton 55. San Jose, California on the 18th at the Ritz. The Canyon Club in Agoura Hills, California on the 19th. The 20th, they'll be in Long Beach, California at Alex's Bar. Go to ReverendHortonHeat.com, click on tour dates, and see all the stuff right there. Oh, Long Beach, California at Alex's Bar sold out, folks. Sorry, on the 20th. Plan accordingly. All right. A lot of fear going on, man. A lot of fear going on. We're going to get into this chat with Mr. Jim Heath here in a moment. And first of all, thank you to Tom of Victory Records who set this up. Tom was quite the gentleman in getting this interview planned and ready to go. So that was very nice of you. Thank you so much, sir, if you're listening. We talked a little bit last week about what was going on in my life. I have to be a little bit vague about this. We've family health issues, all right? That's it. That's as much as I can say. But it's scary. It's a scary thing. It's been rough, I'm not going to lie. been rough. I've been dealing with the back issues, which has been making me quite depressed because I haven't been able to like do much. Can't play with my kids, you know, couldn't get up and do things around the house that needed to be done. I'm finally getting out of that funk. But I'm rolling into another one because of some health stuff that we're facing here. And you know, sorry I have to be so vague about this, but I feel like I need to talk about it. I feel like I need to talk about it, but I also need to respect the person that is going through what they're going through, right? But it's a fear. I'm filled with fear of facing the mortality of a loved one here. And it brings up a lot of questions in your mind, right? Like when something like this is coming up, you're asking yourself a lot of questions like, what are you going to do if the worst happens? What are you going to do? How's it going to affect you? How's it going to affect your family? How are you going to prepare yourself for a loss? I don't know, man. And so it's been weird because I feel like I'm walking around like a fucking zombie all day in this cloud of just this fog of unknown. It's just like crushing me emotionally, right? Crushing me to the point where it's like making me numb. I mean, this is like, I don't know, this is the second week that I'm in it, right? That we're in it. And I feel numb. But there's this thing. So last night we had this huge, huge windstorm. This is why this episode is going up late. We lost power yesterday, Sunday, from when we're recording this, at about 3 o'clock, power goes out. And it's out all night. Marade and I took the kids out to a movie, you know, just to get out of the house. You know, it was starting to get really cold. We had no heat, nothing like that. Out of boredom, go on to Twitter and just start like scrolling through all this like political shit, man. I haven't really been paying attention to the whole political debates and stuff like that. I know who I'm going to vote for. I know who my person is that I want in the White House, who I want to, affect change that I think is so sorely needs to happen in this country. And I'm just starting to go down this rabbit hole of what's been going on in the Trump campaign, you know, and his followers and all these people that are screaming and yelling about certain things. And it's really scary, man, what people are saying on Twitter about, just being violent, just openly savage and advocating for ultra-violence a la, like, A Clockwork Orange, man. It's crazy. It's crazy. So the power's out, you know, and I finally fall asleep after looking at all that shit. That probably wasn't a great idea, but I had this nightmare last night. And it was somewhere along the lines of, like, The Purge. Have you seen that movie, The Purge? It's a pretty intense movie, man. About, like, the overpopulation was a big deal in this movie. And they decided that they were going to have one day out of the year called The Purge, where, you could just do whatever, right? You could break any law. You get out the demons. You could murder. You could steal. You could break into people's houses. Do whatever you want. Well, I had this frickin' like nightmare last night while the power was out in the freezing cold because it was windy. It was stormy. And I have this. With all the shit that's been going on, right? With all the health stuff, my back being kind of down and out because I can't do anything. I can't support my kids. I'm feeling like I can't support my family because my back's so messed up. And then right before I go to bed, I fill my head with all this like savagery online on Twitter from all these crazy like borderline racist people ranting, and I just have this nightmare about this like purge scenario that's happening to me and my family at my house, and I can't do anything about it. And so I finally wake up. The power is still out. It's freezing cold. My kids are in my bed, kicking me in the face, because that's what kids do when they take over your mattress. And I just have this overwhelming feeling of dread. Like not even anxiety, not exactly fear, but just dread. Just absolute dread. Have you ever felt like that? Have you ever felt that feeling of dread? Like something so ominous, something so bad is about to happen, that you know it in your gut, right? It's a very, very visceral fear. And I had that this morning, and it didn't leave until like halfway through the day. I just had it. I had it there, and it was making me feel sick. It was making me feel physically ill. This is really, really depressing. I'm sorry. I'm very sorry. I apologize to Tom at Victory Records. I apologize to Reverend Horton Heat for starting this off this way. But I just felt like I needed to get this out, man. We got some serious shit going on over here. And I'm hoping that we make it out. I'm hoping that we make it out okay. But we'll keep you posted. We'll probably still have to be vague about things for a while. But we'll keep you posted on what's going on. And I'm feeling much better. Just talking about it with you guys, I feel a lot better. And there's been a couple of things this week that have kind of picked me up out of my funk. I got to go back to the University of Washington alongside David Chen, who helped create the Tobolowsky Files, wonderful podcast and show for NPR, and also Cast of Kings podcast, the Game of Thrones podcast, and then also does the Slash Film podcast. Got to sit alongside David Chen. Did I mention he's been on this show before too? A wonderful episode with him. And then good friend Tina Knoll of Large Media, who runs things over at Seattle Kitchens. Great show with Terry Rotaro, chefs Terry Rotaro and Mike and Tom Douglas. I always want to call him Michael Douglas, but that's not right. And we got to talk to some students over at the UW about creating successful podcasts. So that was really nice. Got to answer some questions. Got to listen to some samples that the students were making, and give some feedback. So that's that was really cool. So. Good luck to them if they're listening as well. I'm sorry, this is so depressing. But yeah. Hey, so let's pick ourselves out of this for just a moment. Let's see. We've got a new iTunes review from listener Dan, who I believe tweeted at us last week. Dan's got a podcast. I believe if this is the same Dan, he's got a podcast called Dan. Let's see. What is it? Oh, man. Dan Cable Presents, where he's doing a music podcast as well. So you guys should all go check that out. Dan Cable Presents. You can find him on Twitter at Dan Cable. Dan posted took the pledge and posted a 5-star review, along with a short little review of the show on iTunes, which we urge you all to do. He says, killer podcast, rad interviews hosted by a relatable fella, one of my new favorites. And I had to burp there. Maybe we'll cut that out. Probably not, though. But thank you so much, Dan. That's very, very nice. If you'd like to do what Dan does, go and rate the show, right? And take the pledge, tell your friends about it, bring it up in conversation, do that whole thing, right? And you can also follow us on Twitter, like listener Jordan Naraki, I think Jordan tweets at us quite a bit, and lets me know about all these cool bands that are coming up. And he tweeted at me recently about this new band, one that I should know about, called Sioux Falls out of Portland, Oregon. And I checked it out, and Jordan, this band is awesome, man. And we're going to look into that one, see if we can't get Sioux Falls up here in the backyard sometime soon. So if you'd like to do that, what Jordan does, and get at us on Twitter or connect with us on Twitter, you can follow us at Air Raid Net, okay? So do that as well. All right, let's get into this chat with Jim Heath. We're going to be talking a little bit more about fear, right? Staying relevant, the fear about staying relevant, providing for his kids, and the fear that his parents had when he was deciding to become a professional musician, all right? So let's get into that. Let's go with our first musical break, of course. We're going to be featuring music today from the Reverend Horton Heat. This one's called Mad Mad Heat or Mad Mad Heart. No, wait. No. Not yet. This one's called You Can't Get Away From Me, the full off of the album, the full custom gospel sounds of the Reverend Horton Heat. Okay? Wow. There we go. That's right. All right. We'll be back with more of the Air Raid Podcast for your ears when we return this week with special guest Jim Heath of the Reverend Horton Heat. Stay with us. I was wondering, man. You guys have been around for a really long time, and your music to me has always conjured these feelings of badass cars and leather. And I was wondering, like, are you a car guy?
Well, somewhat. You know, man, I've always had old cars, and I like them a lot.
Yeah.
And my heroes are metal fabricators, so
yeah.
You know, I hang around guys that are better at it than I am. I'm kind of more of a style guy, you know. I like a lot of the stuff of mid-century America.
Uh-huh.
The style of mid-century America. Well, not just America, mid-century also all over the world, but you know, that includes cars, atomic furniture.
Oh, there you go.
Surf guitar. You know.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
It's kind of all intertwined. You know, but yeah, I have a really beautiful 32 Ford High Boy Hot Rod.
Yeah, is that something that you work on when you guys aren't on tour?
Well, not much anymore, man. Right now, I'm very this whole Reverend Horton Heat thing has turned into a real woolly booger, man. I'm really busy. People don't imagine how difficult it is to make the band work and keep it going. It's nonstop, man. You know, so sure. When I get home, you know, and one thing too, you know, through this whole deal, I've been a dad, and I know that's really an uncool thing to say, but you know, man, that's, you know, I'm a dad. I mean, through this whole thing, you know, and so you know, I have to be there for my family, but you know. That, and when I'm not on tour, which I tour 120 days out of the year,
yeah.
I have to focus a lot on music. You know, I have to be in my studio trying to kick out new songs, you know.
So, sure, sure.
You know, the whole, you know, hang around with my buddies, drinking beer and barbecue and with the hot rods is not really something that's part of my life anymore.
Well, Jim, I mean, you've basically made a hobby into a lifelong career. You should be able to pick up a different hobby.
Yeah, I know, but the thing about it is that it's a lifelong career. I mean, this is, you know, music is what I do, and so, you know, kind of yeah, I don't know. You know, man, I think people don't realize how difficult it is to kind of keep a band going.
Oh, I'm sure.
And,
yeah.
You know, so they formulate all these things like some guy said, so are you into camping? I'm like, going, well, I like to camp. I said, you know, but the closest me and my family kind of get to it these days is we get an RV and go to the state park. But, you know, I figured you'd be a camping guy. It's like, well, you know, you're a person that has a lot of time on your hands. I don't have any time on my hands at all. You know, I'm on the road 150 days out of the year. I'm in my studio another 100.
Yeah.
I'm with my family. So, but, you know, man, it's all good. You know, I live vicariously through my cool guy friends.
There you go. There you go.
One of my best friends is a stunt driver.
Really?
You know, so, yeah, that's it. That's a cool guy occupation.
Wait, for like movies, TV, anything?
Yeah, movies, TV, commercials. Yeah, and he's a great mechanic, hot rod guy. He's one of my uh-huh. best friends, and we really see eye to eye on a lot of issues. And you know, man, I get to go to lunch with him maybe about twice a year.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
Go hang out at his shop a little bit, but it's just getting more and more to the point where. You know, people imagine that, you know, man, you just get to play music for a few hours and then that's it. It's a lot more than that. But listen, I can't complain. I get to live I have a dream career. So you know, man, when I'm sitting on the bus riding around, I like to read about cars.
Yeah.
And read about vintage recording equipment, and you know, stay in touch with some of my cool guy friends like Pete Dickerson and Jeff Milburn, and
uh-huh.
you know, I got a lot of connections in this whole world of that. But you know, it ends up being kind of a lot. You know, it's like I said, man, it's about music, man. It's me.
Sure.
I'm about music, man.
Yeah. Well, I got to tell you, I'm a little disappointed that the Reverend Horton Heat on his time off isn't driving around in some like 1957 Corvette Roadster or something like that.
Yeah, I know. Me too. I would be, but I'm too busy going to ballet recitals.
There you go. Yeah.
And yeah, that kind of stuff. So, you know, man, life is a trade-off, you know, and at some point, you know, You gotta realize, you know, you gotta just kind of, you know, get your priorities as best you can, and then kind of let life take you where it's taking you.
There you go. There you go.
I feel sometimes I feel like I have very little control over what I do.
How so?
Well, you know, because a lot about music is very spiritual, and it's the kind of stuff that just hits you from outer space.
Okay.
You know, I could sit down and I could say, oh, I'm going to do an album this way. Well, then I start writing a few songs. Well, then all of a sudden other songs that aren't like that creep in. And the next thing you know, the album is nothing like I played on it to begin with.
Right,
know?
Right.
And, you know, and so, You know, it's kind of like music. Music is cool because you kind of got to be kind of a conductor.
Right.
You know, this stuff kind of comes from outer space, and just all of a sudden, I'm noodling around playing the same guitar licks I've been playing since I was 14 years old, going nowhere with anything. And all of a sudden, bam, I play some little riff or lick or chord change, and I go, whoa, there it is. What is, uh-oh, I got a new song there somewhere.
Yeah.
You know, and it just kind of hits you, you know, and you can't force that. You got to just be there noodling around. Well, you kind of got to force. You got to be there to practice and noodle and,
sure.
and think about it. But then once it hits you, then you do have to force finishing it out, you know. So, you know,
right.
just having a great idea for a song is just the start. You know, then you got to, like, write four or five verses just to get two good ones and try to come up with an arrangement and find the right key for my voice and all that.
Yeah, know? Yeah. Now, are you the type of guy?
That's what I love to do.
Sure, sure. Now, are you are you the type of guy? Do you like when you first started playing guitar? Were you the type of kid that was like learning everything you could about it, or were you just playing from the heart? Like, were you just kind of trying to figure stuff out on your own?
Well, really both. I took some music theory in college.
Uh-huh.
And but in between all that, I would get books and learn about music theory as well as books just about guitar concepts and that kind of thing. And then, but you know, at the end of the day, you know, it was really a lot about just dropping that needle over and over and over on the song I was learning.
Sure,
you know,
sure.
And figuring it out, you know, that way, you know, because you can get the sheet music on how to play a Eddie Cochran solo all day, but it's never quite right. You got to figure it out on your own. You know?
Yeah. Are you there?
Yeah, I'm here.
Oh, okay. I thought I lost you there for a second. No.
I might have lost you there just for a second.
Oh, okay. Well,
I do focus a lot. I love mid-century stuff, you know. So I love surf guitar and Henry Mancini music, you know,
yeah.
that kind of thing, all the way to crazy lo-fi rockabilly like Hazel Atkins, all the way back up to, you know, the Owen Bradley recordings in Nashville, the Patsy Cline and Gene Benson and all that stuff, and cars and furniture and art and stuff. So, you know, that's kind of my artistic, you know, style, you know. And, I think it's really important too, besides me just getting the technicalities of learning to play guitar and singing and songwriting, that to find a style and a niche. And so,
right.
You know, when I discovered the blues is really when I got off into that mid-century thing, and I was really only about 12 or 13 years old, you know, so.
Yeah, yeah. Was that the type of music that, that was being played in the house a lot, or how did you come across that type of music?
No, my parents were from the big band era.
Okay.
And, but they loved music, and they were somewhat musically inclined. My mother could sing 3- and 4-part harmonies when she was 9 years old.
Oh wow!
So, but they didn't. You know that, but you know they didn't. You know, I think they were good parents. They were not good. They were great parents, but
yeah.
they wanted me. I think the me going into music somewhat scared them. Of course, they loved it when I was learning to play guitar. Hey, wow! He can play guitar, you know. But then all of a sudden I'm in a successful band that's playing gigs till 2 a.m, then all of a sudden they didn't like it.
they would much rather have you be a doctor, right?
Well, maybe. I just think that they were just worried about, you know, because and frankly they were right, you know, deciding to have a career in music is kind of opening yourself up to a life of poverty.
Right, right. Yeah.
So, you know, so I, but, you know, but that's either here and there, you know, I discovered the blues, and it's interesting to talk about this because it's Record Store Day. I was riding my bicycle to the to a local mom and pop record store that probably to buy an Alice Cooper or Black Sabbath album.
There you go.
Because I wanted something scary, you know.
Yeah.
Well, I got in there. The guy specialized in blues, and he was always playing Chess records. Sonny Boy Williamson, Little Walter, Howlin' Wolf. Man, I heard Howlin' Wolf.
Yeah.
I'm like, wow, this is scarier than Black Sabbath. To me, it was that edge that I wanted, and then that led. Then I was off to the races. I started learning to play blues guitar, and that ended up in me being in 50s bands, and you know, eventually led me, you know, getting more into just that whole era, which, you know, led me to focus a lot on rockabilly.
Yeah,
guitar.
Yeah. Well, it's and you know, rockabilly has always I don't know too much about it. Like I know your band. I was a big fan of yours and a local Seattle outfit called Gas Huffer that kind of fit that same
mm-hmm.
type of genre.
Uh huh.
And
sure, we did tours with them and stuff.
Right.
We played
right.
A lot of shows with Gas Huffer.
Yeah, I just recently actually had Tom Price in here. From Gas Huffer, and just a fascinating conversation with him. But you know, that type of music, it's very interesting because there's not a lot of types of music out there, for me anyway, personally, that conjure up some sort of visual imagery or you know, conjure up a feeling of almost like time travel, right? Where it can kind of put you in a different place. And I think rockabilly really does that. Like, you know, starting out the conversation talking about, you know, old muscle cars or something like that. That, you know, that's what your music kind of, every time I hear it, it makes me think of that type of style, you know? And did you ever consciously, like, think about that when you were just starting out and learning the blues and putting together your bands?
Well, one thing that I did consciously recognize and that I discovered when, like I was talking about when I discovered the blues, is that mm-hmm. I was searching for something beyond just what I was supposed to like.
Sure.
You know, like, you know, your friends, you know, tell you who's a cool band. Oh, okay, that's a cool band. You know, I wanted music to speak to my soul. So where I heard something, and that's what I discovered when I heard the blues, and 50s rock and roll. It was something that was like, you know, this is the greatest music ever.
Right.
I mean, to me, it's just the greatest thing ever to listen to Jerry Lee Lewis pound straight eights on a piano and just, you know, and sing and play with that wild abandon and fire and soul. You know?
Yeah, yeah.
And so, you know, it was very different. There really weren't, and I felt different, you know, and I knew it was, you know, because there weren't really many other 14-year-old kids that were, you know, listening to blues from the 50s.
Yeah, yeah.
I think actually I was the only kid in my school that was doing it. But to me, it was the greatest ever, and, you know, and the whole thing just opened up this whole, you know, deal of music that really spoke to my soul. I think getting back to the original question is just, it was something better than just being into whatever my friends said was the coolest band or whatever the radio station and corporate music was telling me I should listen to was the best.
Sure, sure.
You know, and so because you know, I knew that I wanted to find out what I liked, you know, and so you know, I did, and I you know, discovered that you know, those types of genres from that era, and you know, and I mean, it's really stuck with me, you know. And I like all sorts of types of music, and I like stuff. I like music. I don't really get too down on necessarily. Sometimes maybe, but I don't really get too down on any kind of music, you know.
Mm-hmm.
I love music, and it's not something that is just that I want to get too snobby about.
Sure,
you know?
Sure. Well, that I think that kind of comes with being more mature, right? Like, because I remember, you know, growing up here in Seattle in the 90s, you couldn't really like anything else than what was going on in the quote unquote grunge scene, right? A lot of those guys would look down, or you know, being an outsider looking in, we all thought that a lot of those guys would look down on listening to different styles of music or something like that, and it always, you know.
Yeah.
It was always like this little secret that I would keep in my back pocket that I was listening to something other than Nirvana and Pearl Jam and things like that.
Right. Yep.
And yep. Now that,
well, you know,
that's
the thing is it scenes can get too snobby, and I mean,
sure.
Honestly, I see it a lot. I see it a lot in the rockabilly scene.
Really?
Because the really straight rockabilly bands, you know, have fans that love them, and I love those bands too, man. I mean, I love Big Sandy. I love Pete Dickerson. I love there's some new bands coming out that are really good at doing the authentic. Just complete. They sound exact. They sound like they're from the 50s.
Sure.
But
sure.
Then again, too, you know, there's a lot of those fans that like that kind of music that. You know that people get excited about music, and so they start wanting to hate on other types of music, I guess. I just want to be friendly to people and understand that I like what I do. I like a lot of that, you know, those bands that people get kind of snobby about. I love those bands too.
Sure. Well, I got to tell you, man. You seem like a very friendly person, so I think you've succeeded in that realm.
Not all the time.
So you've been. I mean, you guys have been at this. Reverend Horton Heat has been a legitimate thing for over 30 years, man.
Yeah.
That's a huge. In my book, that's a huge accomplishment.
Yeah, I know. I don't know. I don't like to think about it too much.
You don't?
No. In fact, I really don't like to think about it because I'm always looking forward. You know, I'm always looking toward what I can do that's going to be cool. The next cool thing I can do. I'm looking forward to getting better. I'm looking forward to new and better songs and I don't like if I start looking back on what I've accomplished, it's great. You know, it's very easy to rest on your laurels.
Yeah.
When you
do
that instead of trying to be vital in the here and the now. So, but you know, that being said, I am proud of what I've done with this thing, and I'm proud of my guys that have been with me through it. And we sacrificed and continue to sacrifice a lot to make this happen.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so,
well, that's, you know, I mean, that's, you were saying earlier that you're basically touring like 150 days out of the year. And then when you're not, you're working on new stuff. You're in the studio, not working on cars.
I wish I was.
but you're also a dad, and that's got to be really tough being out from the or away from the family for that long, I would imagine.
Yeah, it's just really tough. It's especially on days off.
Uh-huh.
It's hard on me, but man, what's really hard, it really hurts is when it's hard on my children. You know, when my daughters cry when I'm leaving to go on tour. That's hard.
Yeah,
because
yeah.
They're crying because they need me there with them.
Sure. And how old are they?
Now we just text a lot.
Yeah. Right.
Well, my youngest is 9, and she texts me. She sends me text messages that are nothing but emojis.
Yeah.
Like 10 of them, and I'm... So it's all good, man. My family is we've got an interesting setup.
Uh-huh.
You know, everybody's different. You know,
sure.
Every family and every person in this world is different, and we are we don't necessarily like what has to happen, but we are used to it. You know, they're used to me having to leave on these trips for 3 or 4 weeks every now and then, and I say they'll kind of all the time, but
yeah.
But when I'm home, I can really be home for them. So, you know, it's worked out. It's worked out. So,
yeah. Do you think, because you said we were talking about a little bit earlier when you kind of became a professional musician and your parents were a little bit worried about that, would you have the same worries for your kids if they wanted to go in the same direction?
Yes, I absolutely would.
Uh-huh.
But at the same time, since that's what I've done, I really can't keep them from doing it if that's what they want to do.
Sure, you know? Sure.
So, it's an odd thing, man. It's an odd thing. I think that, the one thing about being a parent is that, you know, you realize pretty quickly that this is a whole different person.
Oh, sure.
You can try to mold them and shape them, but then at some point, everybody in this world, including your own children, have their own unique personalities and interests. And so, you know, at some point, you kind of just got to go with it.
Like
I said a minute ago, it feels like I have very little control over what happens in my life.
That is definitely true. I've got two very young daughters myself. One's about to be 2 years old. One's about to be 5, and they're their own little entities, man. And like when they, you know, get to the age where their personality starts to form, that is an amazing, amazing process.
Yeah. Yes, it is. It is amazing, you know. So. Yeah, and I love being a dad, and it's all worked out somehow, man. It's all worked out. I don't know how.
Yeah,
but you know, a lot of it's fear. For me, fear has been a big motivator.
Yeah,
because you know I've got these people I have that rely on me to take care of them.
Sure,
so got to do the best I can. You know, and I don't. You know, keeping the wolves away from the door.
That's a big thing that kind of drives you in your musical endeavors as well.
Fear, yes.
Yeah.
Yes, fear is a great. It's one of the best motivators of it.
Well, I gotta imagine
it's better than confidence.
Yeah.
With confidence, you go out there and you go, "I'm already great. I'm here. I'm already great. Hey, look at me. I'm pretty. I'm good looking. I'm talented.
Right.
I'm confident."
Yeah.
You know, but fear's like, man, I better practice my ass off or I'm going to get my ass handed to me.
Sure, sure. That's really interesting. I've never, I don't think in the close to 300 interviews that we've done for this show, I've never heard a musician say that before.
That's interesting.
That's a very unique take, man. That's a very unique take. I mean, I got to imagine that the time that you've been at this has kind of formed that opinion because you've seen the industry change so much since you started out.
Yep.
And that, I mean.
Yeah, it's been crazy, especially the recording side of it. You know,
right,
of course, it's
right.
Been crazy, you know. We got a deal after, you know, the Sub Pop deal in Seattle.
Right.
That thing got so big that we kind of, all of a sudden, we got a big record deal with Interscope Records.
Uh-huh.
But that was like the very last few years that bands were getting big record deals like that.
What was that
like? It started
backing
down not long after that, and then with every release. release, after each release in the mid-90s, you know, we noticed that the more and more the internet, the bigger the internet got, the harder it was for bands to, you know, sell CDs and all that. So,
yeah.
But you know, the thing about us, we always flew under the radar on that because we play so much live. Live is for our financial purposes. That's our bread and butter.
Sure, sure.
So
I gotta imagine that now that's more of a thing than ever, right?
And it is, and a lot of bands have had to adapt.
Sure.
And a lot of the great, big, rich, older bands, you know, they've had to come back into my playground, you know. So, you know, we play a lot at the House of Blues circuit, for instance. Well, you know, we're in there now competing against all these bands like Foreigner, you know,
yeah.
Stuff like that, you know, Foreigner, and these bands are having, you know, they're not selling as many records, and they can't sell out arenas anymore, so
right.
They're going and doing a lot of the same circuit that we're doing.
Yeah.
So, you know, I'm super grateful that Riverport, he never really had that happen to us, you know. It's a blessing in disguise to never have a bunch of hit records, because the fallback from having a big hit record is long and usually devastating, and usually breaks the band up, so where then there's no more music, no more art.
Well, sure.
You know, some guys who remember how they used to be.
Yeah, yeah. I've never really thought about it that way. That's another interesting point that you bring up, because, yeah, when you do have a band like that, like, let's use Foreigner as the example, the only way you can go is down, right? You can't keep on climbing.
Yeah,
it's unsustainable.
Right. Yeah, no, that's right. And without mentioning names, there's some bands that have been out on tour with us that have opened up for us that have platinum-selling albums.
Sure.
But
yeah.
they can't really generate the concert ticket sales like they could back when they were selling all those records. And so, you know, they're out opening up for Reverend Orton Need, of all things.
Does that feel good? How does that feel? What does that make you feel like?
Well, not necessarily good, because I don't really like I don't like to see people fall back.
Sure.
I understand. People be successful. So, but it's just kind of the way it is, you know. And you know, if Reverend Horton Heat had a big hit record and got used to big money or something like that, then you know, it would have been quite the long fall, and you know, so it's a bit of a blessing in disguise. And we've always been able to sell concert tickets well. And the other thing that's kind of happening now is the Facebook thing. Obviously, everybody knows that's happening now. But what's happening is that these bands will, you know, get popular on Facebook or Instagram, Snapchat, or whatever. Twitter or whatever, and they've got 500,000 followers or more, but they can't go to these towns that we go to and draw enough people to make the promoters hire.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, so you know, that's the whole thing about how many, you know, judging how big a band is by how many likes they have on Facebook. That's not really working out too well for something.
I totally agree with you, because we hit that with this show quite a bit. You know, I mean, people look at that. They look at your, you know, how many likes you have on one of these social media services and stuff like that. But it doesn't really amount to anything, because you know, people go through a list. And they'll just like what they, you know, fuck, man. It, like, they got, you know, Tide Bleach probably has 2 million followers on Twitter. For what? You know? What's the point?
Yeah, I see what you're saying. Anyhow, what it comes down to is music and art. You know,
sure.
We're out here making music. And music is a streaming thing. It's not like writing a book where you're finished and then you edit it, then you publish it, and it's done. Music is streaming. It's endless. It just, once you do it, it goes away. So you have to do it again.
Yeah.
You know, so it's we go to all these places, you know, all these different towns, and keep making our art, which is playing music, you know, which is, you know, to me, the art form of music is less about recording and more about live, because if you think about it, the greatest musicians in history never really made a recording.
Right.
You
yeah.
know, there's not a recording of Mozart playing harpsichord.
Yeah.
We can guess by the sheet music about what it was like. But, you know, music is so a lot of people got so focused on the recording technology side of music, you know, and making, oh, that's the art form. You know, when really to me, the art form is getting out there and playing music, not being stuck in some sterile studio for 2 weeks every year.
Right, right.
So that's kind of transcending now into this whole social media thing. You know,
sure.
It's not about, not really about making friends on Facebook. It's more about going out there playing for the people. And when you do that, if you can do it in your hometown and draw a couple of hundred people to your shows, then you're golden. You can go do that in any city in the world, maybe any city in the world, but
yeah,
for sure
yeah.
any city in your region and any city in America.
So would you say that that your success and your staying power is a function of your live shows predominantly?
Oh yeah.
And your ability to tour?
It's a real blessing that's our bread and butter.
Yeah.
You know,
we didn't make
selling albums and product our bread and butter. So we were touring before we ever had our album out.
Right, because you guys started in what, 1985?
Yeah, 86, late 85, early 86.
Okay.
Kind of cloudy.
And then you're yeah, right.
If I'd have known it would have mattered, I would have written it down. I didn't know it mattered.
Tom didn't send you any notes?
yeah, Tom should. Yeah, no, Tom, I don't think Tom was born yet.
Your first album came out on Sub Pop in 1990, so you guys had been, you know, doing your thing for a good 4 years.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. We've been growing our fan base in the Texas region, and then the mid. Then we toured all over America before we got signed to Sub Pop.
Really, really.
So in some ways, they kind of had to sign us.
Yeah, right, right.
They kind of had to, you know, because here we were playing all the same venues that their other bands were playing, like Nirvana and Soundgarden and Mud Onion, what have you. That they were doing the same type of alternative rooms we were, you know, just because our music wasn't like that. We weren't from Seattle.
Right.
And some people, a lot of people in Seattle resented us getting signed to that label.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
But, you know, I mean, I was happy to be there, and we loved being part of that scene, man. We loved that scene, you know. Whenever those bands came to Texas, we were always there for them, you know.
Yeah,
so, you know, when we went on tour, you know, but...
That's great, man. I actually remember. I still have my copy of "Smoke 'Em If You Got 'Em," and that was your first release on Sub Pop. And I just remember. I mean, seeing your name on posters with the likes of like Mudhoney and bands like that was always really cool. And I think that's probably how I first found out about you guys. Anyway. You know, seeing it in the in the Rocket or something like that, you know. But
Well, that's cool, man. I tell you what, the city of Seattle's been a big important thing to our career. So,
oh, that's cool.
You know, we couldn't be happier about, you know, or more grateful to Sub Pop.
Yeah,
people
yeah.
of Seattle. So,
well, that's great, man. So, are you happy with where you're at now? Even though you know you basically have told me that you live in fear. And that you miss your kids.
Yeah, I do. I live in fear every day. I can't get into details of why I'm scared today, but I will say this, that, yeah, you know, this could all go away at any time. Who knows, man? I'm not afraid of dying. I'm afraid of my band petering out.
Yeah.
So I got to keep it going, man. I got to keep it going.
Yeah, yeah.
So,
well, you're doing it, dude.
I'm fairly happy where I'm at, but like I said, I don't like to rest on my laurels, you know.
Yeah,
there's a lot of stuff about me and my music that I would like to get better at and to shore up a little bit. But man, there's a lot of good things, you know. I mean, good things come out of stuff. You know, one thing about bands, you know, the internet age and the reduced amount of money that labels offer bands to make records.
Mm-hmm.
Well, also, you have digital technology that's enabling all of these bands, including my band, to record yourself at a really high professional level without having to spend the money in the studio.
Right, right.
And then I've been doing a lot of that in the last several years.
Yeah.
You know, I've got a little project studio and a lot of cool vintage gear and tape machines, as well as Pro Tools and all that. But at the end of the day, it's about me getting down there and pounding out guitar. And I love the new digital age in that, because I can go in there and pound out guitar anytime I want to do it.
Yeah.
Without having
like
book studio time and make sure that the other guys aren't going to be on vacation or something. You know what I'm saying?
So I
can go in the studio and bang stuff out and get everything going, and then get the guys in, and bam, we got a new song. So
yeah, that's excellent, man. Well, hey, I know that I have to let you go here. But I just want to say it's been a pleasure and an honor to speak with you today, Jim. Thank you very much.
Hey, man, thank you so much. I really appreciate you helping us on this deal.
Yeah, definitely, definitely. All right, Jim, have a great tour,
all right,
man.
Thank you, Aaron.
Bye-bye.
Okay, Aaron, you take care of yourself.
Will do. Thanks.
Okay, bye-bye.
Bye. Oh, my God. The Reverend Horton Heat, man. That was awesome. That was so great. Oh, man, that made me feel so much better about myself. And about where I'm at, and about my fear and my dread. Just listening back to that, that was great. That was great. Because you know what? You always make it through, right? You just gotta power through and take what life throws at you, man. I guess that's my takeaway. And it doesn't help. It doesn't hurt to just be awesome at playing guitar and making music for 30 plus years, folks. 30 plus years. The Reverend Horton Heat. Catch them. Petaluma, California, the 16th at the Mystic Theater. They'll be at San Jose, California on the 18th at the Ritz. The 19th in Agora Hills, California, at the Canyon Club, and so on and so forth. Go to ReverendHortonHeat.com, click on tour dates, and find yourself at a show, okay? Also, you can find all their albums there, spanning the test of time, all the way back to 1990, their first album on Sub Pop Records. Okay. Big thanks once again, to Tom of Victory Records for setting this up. Big thanks to Mr. Jim Heath for taking the time to chat with us this week. And thank you to all of you who are listening to the show. And we've got a couple reminders right here. You can subscribe to the Air Raid podcast on iTunes. And if you do, please take a moment, like Dan did, to rate and review the show. You don't really even have to review it. Just leave a short little star rating right there. Only takes a couple seconds. Really helps us out. We're also available on the Stitcher, TuneIn, Cairo Radio, and Spreaker apps for your mobile devices. Or you can visit our website, air-raid.net, to subscribe directly to our RSS feed and hear more in-depth conversations with musicians like Mike McCready of Pearl Jam, Chris Walla of Death Cab for Cutie, Macklemore. How about Mark Arm of Mudhoney, or Tom Price of Gas Huffer, or Buzz Osborne of the Melvins, Yeah, that's right, man. Let's see, who else? Chris Ballew of the President's United States of America. Also, comedians like Mike Birbiglia, Pete Holmes, and so on and so forth. Eddie Pepitone, I'm staring at his face right now on this giant poster that we have in the studio that he signed. It was, yeah, he's been on the show a couple times. Anyway, we've got a whole host of amazing musicians, amazing comedians, amazing artists, directors, actors, writers, everything right there at air-raid.net. And remember to take the pledge, folks. Take the pledge to tell somebody about this show. Bring it up in conversation and urge your friends to subscribe to it if you think they'll be into it. Or just while their back is turned, get on their iPhone and subscribe them to it for us, right? That's not illegal. It's not illegal. They're your friend. They're not going to sue you for something like that. You can also keep in touch with us by liking our Facebook page at facebook.com/TheAirRaid Podcast. Our Twitter handle is @AirRaidNet, and you can tweet at us like listener Jordan does from time to time. Tell us about a new band that you like or something that you like about the show. Or you can email me directly, aaron@air-raid.net. All right, we're going to go out this week with another song by the Reverend Horton Heat. This is off their latest album. This one's called Let Me Teach You How to Eat, off the album The Rev. Or no, it's just Rev, from 2013 on Victory Records. All right. Thank you so much for listening, everybody. We will be back next week with an all-new episode of Air Raid for your ears. Have a great week. This is the Reverend Horton Heat. Let me teach you how to eat. We'll see you next week. Thanks, everyone.
I'll teach you things that you never knew. How to choke the chicken and make a meat stew. We can cook your taco in the middle of the street and really feel good. Let me teach you how to eat. Let's go now. Let me teach you how to shred. Let me teach you how to shred. Shredding lettuce by the head. Let me teach you how to shred. Make a yummy sweet bread. Let me teach you how to shred. Let me teach you how to toast. Make a bloody red roast. Let me teach you how to toast. Be the perfect party host. Let me teach you how to toast. I'll teach you things that you never knew. How to choke a chicken or make a meat stew. We can cook your taco in the middle of the street and really feel good. Let me teach you how to eat. Let me teach you how to eat. Let me teach you how to eat. How to marinate the meat. Let me teach you how to eat. It's a culinary treat. Let me teach you how to eat. Let me teach you how to eat.